Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today, I'm talking to Charlotte author Carol Baldwin. She's fabulous, and I met her at a local library event. When I found out that her book Half Truths will be out next June, I knew I had to have her on the pod. We talk about publishing, writing, research, and organization. Enjoy! I've never been smart with investments or stocks, but one thing I've learned over the years is that an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. If you want to get smart with your money, you can trade smarter and maximize your returns with Trade with UFOs. Trade with UFOs is a brand that represents a community of users trading with predictive tools. You don't have to be good with stocks. They literally hold your hand while you trade, teaching you everything you need to know. You see, Trade with UFOs is also a portal which provides access to predictive apps, courses, and coaching, all to show you how to make money using unfilled orders. Why am I so passionate about this? Because then we'll all have more money in our pockets to buy more art. It's time to get smart with your money. Leverage your success with Trade with UFOs. Go to tradewithufos.com and use my offer code Brooke for a 50% off discount on all of their products. That's B-R-O-O-K-E.
Oh.
Okay. Hey, how you doing?
All right. It said I had to hit okay for being recorded, and then I, okay.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I'm in Florida, and it's hot, so so I thought, I don't have to change my clothes, or?
Nope, not at all, not at all. Makeup, so. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, we're here for just a couple days, and I understand it's not very nice in Charlotte right now.
No, it's very dreary in Charlotte. It's raining, yeah, it's been raining all day, all weekend. What are you doing in Florida?
We actually come here about once a month or so. I don't come as often as my husband. We're actually Florida residents.
Cool.
But I don't like it as much as Charlotte.
Okay.
So we have a small house here. My husband is semi-retired. And so we sort of go back and forth. Not exactly back and forth, but.
Right. Right. Neat. That sounds awesome. Sounds really cool. A lot of writing material there, I would imagine.
Yes, writing material. But tell you what, so you're recording this already, right?
Right, but we're just warming up. So
okay, so you're gonna edit all this out. Okay, so yeah, there's always writing material everywhere, but I feel like I don't have time to write right now because there is so much to do to get ready for a book to come out.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. And you have two books, or you actually have more than two books. You have several books, but the two that I read about, Teaching the Story and Half Truths, which is coming out. Is that the one you're talking about, Half Truths?
Half Truths is coming out next year. Yeah, cool. I have two nonfiction that are out. So you have Teaching the Story, and the other one is Friendship Counseling.
Okay.
Both of them are out of print, but you can find copies on Amazon. I mean, I could talk about them if you want to, or just talk about, you know, I was comfortable for the longest time just writing nonfiction. It just seemed less scary than writing fiction.
Oh yeah, totally, for sure.
Yeah, and so that's how I sort of eased myself into writing a novel.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wanted to kind of talk about that because I was just telling someone the other day that writing fiction is a whole other beast than writing nonfiction.
It is.
And I mean, nonfiction is comparatively very easy compared to, you know, fiction, because you've got a whole plot structure and it just doesn't work if you don't follow. And I did, because I've tried it, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah. It is a very different beast.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people are more comfortable with that than with nonfiction because they can make it all up.
Right.
But it still has rules. I mean, yeah. you can't just like make up a world where the, you know, there are Martians that are, you know, an inch big and they can see around the world or something crazy like that. You know,
right.
All stuff has to be consistent.
Absolutely. So,
but, you know, most people have no idea what goes into writing a book.
No, they don't. Yeah.
I know you know that.
So tell me, like, when did you realize that you were a writer?
My mother encouraged me as a child growing up.
Mm-hmm.
She said, Carol, you have a way with words. And I think that was a great blessing that she bestowed on me. I don't think I knew that about myself.
Right.
I always liked to write. That's the way I process the world.
Yeah.
And I wrote diaries from, you know, I'm going to say around 10, 11. I can't remember that far back.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've always enjoyed writing and, you know, submitted some dumb poetry at an early age. And, so let me take my, I don't want that dinging. That was a text that came in, and I hope I can't guarantee that it's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
I love to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you want to write, you need to read.
Right. Right.
But I really think it was my mother just encouraging me. I remember when she was sick when I was young, and I would write her these little prescriptions and stick them in bottles. And I have no idea what I wrote, but that, you know, she really loved that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Interesting enough, she was an artist.
Oh, wow.
So she was a self-trained artist, and both my parents were from Germany, they really appreciated the arts.
Yeah.
So any art appreciation I have now is because of them.
Right.
And we, you know, as my mother grew older and was able to do her art, you know, we would have conversations about, you know, and I would admire what she could do, and I could never do what she did with her oils or watercolor or pastels.
Mm-hmm.
And she would, you know, basically say we all have different kinds of art that we are equipped to do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, what kind of art did she do?
Well, she loved landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
So they would travel in Europe and bring home pictures, and then she would, you know, she would print them out somehow, I don't know how, and she would copy them.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't like she would go on location and paint a mountain scene or that kind of a thing.
Right.
So, you know, I have several oils in my home now that were from photographs, probably that my father took.
Neat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool. So yeah, you could make a story out of those.
Yes, yes. But actually, now I feel like I'm giving my mother all the glory. My father also, I realized later on in my life, he was a reader, and he liked to write, not in any way fiction or anything like that. I remember him reading a story, so he loved stories. But he also wrote his autobiography.
And oh,
it was
wow.
Short, you know, it was short. It was, you know, 10, 15 single-spaced pages.
Mm-hmm.
But you could see his desire to record his life.
Yeah.
And so I think that I have definitely gotten that from him.
That is very cool. Yeah, that is really neat. That's something very close. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so one of my works in progress, I have Half Truths is finished and coming out, and then I have two other books that I have started and need to work on, and one of them is a graphic novel.
Ooh.
Based loosely on my father's life in Nuremberg. It's called Nightmare in Nuremberg.
Okay.
My father's family escaped from Nuremberg.
Ooh.
Right before World War II.
Wow.
Right before World War II.
Wow. So. Wow. That sounds like a very gripping story.
If I can write it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that I will.
Well, I think, I mean, with his autobiography, I think you have a good basis for it.
Well, yes. I mean, I definitely gleaned events from what he wrote about and people that he wrote about.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting. I love research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big black hole. Some people hate it, but I really love it. And I love to find the connections.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so my husband and I traveled in Germany last year, and I spent a day in Nuremberg.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there before, but this time I was more intentional about what I wanted to try to discover. And we'll have to talk about that sometime, and especially if I get into writing that book, because some of the things I found were really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of research as well, but my problem is that I have a hard time keeping track of everything, keeping it all organized.
Yes.
What's your secret?
What's my secret? I've gotten better. Word is not the best tool just because it can be so scattered. But I
Right.
mean, obviously, you want to document whatever you have and you want to create some kind of file system for yourself.
Yeah.
So half truths, I mean, half truths took me 16, 17 years to go from the beginning to when it's getting published.
Wow.
And so that was a lot of revision and a lot
Yeah.
of project time.
Yeah.
And between you and me, I don't know where all those revisions are.
Yeah.
So I have the most recent ones, but I don't know where they're, I'd have to do some digging around in my computer or somewhere I stashed it online.
Right.
So that is not the best, but unless you set yourself up a particular way of organizing the material. What I have found is Scrivener is better. Are
Yeah,
you familiar with Scrivener?
I've heard of that, and I think I might have even looked at it a few times.
Yes.
But so you advocate that.
Well, actually what I did is I went from, for half-truths, I went from Word to Scrivener, then back to Word because you have to, you can't use, when you're finished with a product in Scrivener, you have to get it back into Word to send it to a publisher.
Oh, wow.
Well, maybe that's, don't quote me on that. Probably there's probably ways in within Scrivener that you can send it. I mean, you can even self-publish from Scrivener.
Oh, wow.
I never looked into it. But, and now I had to, the publisher I had to put it into Google Docs. So that was, some people use Google Docs. I think it's really, you have to find a system and use it and stick with it. And even if you have to make notes about your system.
I've been using Google Docs a lot recently just because it's, well, I don't have Word on my Mac, and you could also save as a Word document in Google Docs. So
That's right.
that's I found that to be helpful.
Yeah. With Scrivener, you can import all of your research into Scrivener. You can
Ooh.
import photographs.
Okay.
So you can have in Scrivener a huge amount of stuff.
Neat. Yeah, that's a benefit for sure. For sure. So let's talk about your talk about half truths. What's the story, what's the that story about, and what's the story behind it?
Okay, so the pitch is a 16-year-old Southern girl wants to become a journalist to shed light on 1950s racial injustice, but can she overcome family constraints and fears to make her voice heard?
Sounds gripping.
So I hope so.
Yeah.
So the simpler way of saying it is it's a white girl and a black girl who discover they are second cousins.
Oh, wow.
So that, and it's in 1950.
Okay.
Okay. So the backstory on it is that when I got around to thinking, okay, I'm ready to write a novel after I had written nonfiction and I had published a couple of stories in Highlights magazine articles, nonfiction articles in Highlights, I thought, okay, I'm ready now. I can make that
Yeah.
story and work on a novel. And I had met a historical fiction novelist, Joyce Hostetter, and she lives in Hickory, North Carolina. And she, it had been recommended to her that she find the story in her own backyard. And she found out that there was a polio epidemic in Hickory. And she ended up writing about that polio epidemic. But
Neat.
that inspiration or that instruction to find the story in your own backyard was just like, okay. So I was in Charlotte. I had moved from South Jersey. And so I was a newcomer. And I was like, well, so what's the story here? What could have taken place here? And particularly, I was curious about what are some of the events that led up to the civil rights movement and in the 60s. So I knew that I wanted to write a pre-civil rights story. And when I told an instructor that, he said, Carol, that's just the setting. what does your character want? What is your character going to be about?
Okay.
You know? And so, all right, I'm going to sneeze. I hope you can edit this out. Anyway, so I had to figure out, you know, who was my character and what did she want? And I came up with this idea. I cannot tell you how, but I just came up with this idea, this girl who grew up in the rural area. I didn't know if it was going to be North Carolina or South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And that she moved to Charlotte and lived in Myers Park with her rich grandparents. Mm-hmm. But she grew up on a farm.
Okay.
So she comes into Charlotte and she feels like a fish out of the water in mm-hmm. Charlotte. And that at her grandparents' house, she would meet this Black girl who's very light-skinned Black girl mm-hmm. who works for her grandmother. Mm-hmm. And they discover over however they discover, which was is the bulk of the book, mm-hmm. you know, that they are related.
Wow.
And how does that impact both of them? But primarily the white girl is the protagonist, Kate Dinsmore.
Okay.
And so she has come from the position of poverty, not poverty, but a rural, very rural background.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she comes to Charlotte because she's counting on her grandparents to be able to fund her education.
Okay.
Her father, this is her paternal grandparents. So there's like mystery involved with why did her father move to out of Charlotte? Why did he move to Tabor City, North Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that comes out in the book, but she just thinks that sort of money will buy her happiness and the money will be the her road to everything. And
right.
even though she doesn't feel like a debutante girl, her grandmother's in the society world.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting all these texts now. I don't know. I did whatever I could to shut it off.
No, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Okay. Okay. Now I lost my train of thought.
The debutantes.
Okay, so she gets swallowed up in that world.
Okay.
You will, and has to make some decisions and make some poor decisions and then regrets it. And, you know, throughout the story, there's the friendship between her and Lillian. Lillian is the name of the Black girl. Mm-hmm. They bond over a goat. Kate brings a goat with her to Charlotte. I mean. You know, I know you're in Charlotte, so it's hard to believe, but they did have animals in Myers Park.
I believe it.
Yeah, they did. So Kate brings a goat with her. The goat gets sick. Lillian ends up helping her to find a way to get the goat over being sick.
Mm-hmm.
And things happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell the whole story.
No. Just the gist.
But this is a neat thing about research. And this is something that Joyce helped me with, that author I was mentioning to you,
right?
I tried so many different places and ways to begin the book. I didn't know where it began or with who. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because this was my first novel, mm-hmm. I was just all over the place. And that's yeah. one of the reasons why I had so many drafts and so many revisions, because yeah. I was so brand new to this and also had to learn how to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, along the way, I had seen that in 1950 in Tabor City, North Carolina, there was a KKK revival.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And when I told Joyce about that, she's like, that's it. You know, you need to find a way to put that into your book. And so the book opens with the KKK coming into Tabor City, North Carolina, which is where Kate lives. It's a tobacco farm. Mm-hmm. It's still in existence. It's a very small blip on the map on the way to Myrtle Beach,
mm-hmm.
but that's a real historic event.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the man who reported on it won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting and his editorials against the KKK.
Wow.
So that's to me, that's one of the cool things about historical novels mm-hmm. is bringing in real people and real yeah. events. So I have Horace Carter, who won that Pulitzer Prize, mm-hmm. as well as significant charlatans who Kate meets along the way.
Neat. Well, you know, it's funny because I guess for the longest time, I just didn't get historical fiction. I was just like, how can you, You can't change history. What? But now I'm just like, that's like the best way to learn. I think that's the best way to teach. That's the best way to get a feel of what's going on. Not necessarily like the main characters in history, but just the periphery characters. And just, you know, creating your own story and learning about that era or that culture. And so now I'm a huge fan.
Well, that's great.
But for the longest time, I wasn't sure that I would be. I wasn't sure that I was a fan.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, like, I don't like historical fantasy because I feel like that's really like, oh, now you're stretching it.
Yeah.
Like, it's really important for me. I mean, it's super important to me. I can't tell you how important it is to make this authentic.
Right.
And, you know, having Joyce as a mentor has helped because she went through that process with the books that she wrote and her editing process. I mean, I learned a lot from that.
Mm-hmm.
But I interviewed probably more than 100 people.
Wow.
For Half Truths, both white and black. And particularly, I have really wanted to make it as close as possible for the black experience.
Okay.
So I started out, when I first wrote Half Truths, it was just from Kate's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it to a writer's conference and an editor suggested that I write it from both girls' points of view, both white and black.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't think I can do that.
Right.
That's, you know, lots of reasons. And this was probably, I don't remember, 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
or so. And I spent 2 years working on that. Which was very difficult to write from two points of view, first novel,
sure.
All that.
I'm sure.
By the time I got ready to submit it, I was highly recommended that I don't because I'm white.
Yeah.
And that it would not have been received well that I was writing from a black girl's point of view.
Right, right.
So I learned a lot about Lillian and her character and her family. But I ended up going back to and I rewrote it again just mm-hmm. from Kate's point of view.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask, like, how would you have even done that? That's
write it from Lillian's point of view?
Or, yeah, writing from both points of view.
Oh, from both points of view?
Right.
Well, it's hard. I mean, you're sure because, you know, you and it was also first person point of view. And I guess that's, you know, as much as possible, you're trying to immerse yourself inside the psyche and the emotions of the person and their responses and how they would think. So I read quite a few books, probably, I mean, because I'm white, I read more books about the black experience mm-hmm. to help
yeah.
me with that.
Right.
You know, including fiction that about biracial blacks. So I just tried to get into that as much as I could to understand yeah. the experience.
Yeah.
And at that point in my thinking, I was thinking that Kate's journey might parallel Lillian's journey. And I was thinking that Lillian's journey, so Kate is like a fish out of water. She comes to Charlotte
mm-hmm.
and becomes a debutante, sort of trying to change herself
mm-hmm.
and then realizes that's not authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's her story. And then with Lillian, I was going to have her, I worked out this whole everything about how she, so she's very light skinned, how she decides she's going to try to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so that she would pass into the white world,
uh-huh.
then she would realize that that's inauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote, you know, very, you know, that was difficult, that storyline.
Right.
Again, that's where all my reading
mm-hmm.
helped me out with that. And then decided not to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it was really hard at the time to
yeah,
realize
I can imagine.
This was not the way to go, but I think it was the wiser way for me to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, that's gotta be hard just to kind of like, have it planned out in your head that this is the way it's going to be. And then just having to spend so much time on it and sit so much time in work and then just kind of have to change, which, you know, I'm familiar with that. And,
I'm sure you are.
So it's gotta be. On the one hand, I think it's kind of it can be kind of easy, I guess, to make up your mind that this is the wrong way to do it. But it's just kind of hard to neglect all the hours of research and work that you've already done.
Right.
So how did you
yeah.
would you kind of do that?
Yeah, but I think that's probably true of a lot of artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know that we all see the end result. We don't see the hours and
Yeah.
hours of labor that went into that.
Right. That is true. It's very true. Yeah, I'll see all the drafts and all the revisions and stuff like that.
Right.
So yeah, but it's and I guess you could always go back to that. You could always go back to an original idea. But yeah, that would be, but again, my thing would be just like the keeping track of it all. So.
Well, I'm not sure how well I have done.
So.
If you were to ask me to find some of these drafts, I'd be like, oh, really?
Well, I think that's awesome. So, but you do a lot of like library stuff and like similar to the stuff that I met you at, like
Right.
the Five Tamales.
Yeah.
So you're a busy gal. You do like you're it's kind of like shattered my stereotype of like the writer who's like cloistered in their room, just kind of like doing this. You're out and about and all over the town and doing stuff.
Well, I want to do that. I mean, partly writing is pretty solitary, and I really like people. And I love teaching writing. And it's really enjoyable for me to teach teens or adults, particularly like that event I met you at. Well, I met you at one that I wasn't leading, so, but I had led another one within that series on the well, so it was the community read on Buttermilk Graffiti. And so I had done a couple workshops on that, and it was I called it writing food memories and writing. And so we had food because it was all about food. That book was all about food. So we had different food samples, and people, ate the samples and they would think back about their memories and record their memories, and then they wrote some poems. And what was so fun about that, the poems that some of the poems that came out were just wonderful. I gave them a template and they filled it out and they were like, I didn't know I could do that. And that to me is so fun. And a couple of times it was people who had really, some people really had no aspirations of being a writer, but there was like a couple who were like thinking about it, and nobody had my mother who affirmed me. Seriously, they didn't know, they hadn't thought about the fact that they were a writer.
Okay, so you said you brought up templates. Like, what kind of templates would you give them?
Okay, so that template was, I found it online. Actually, Joyce told me about it, and it's called A Poem I Am From Poem. And it's online, and the author, generously made it available to other people. And basically, it's like Mad Libs.
Oh,
So,
cool.
it had spaces for people to fill things in, and I tweaked it to make it more about food because we were focusing on food. So, or on, so people would draw from their memories of a kitchen or a dining room or their ancestors. I mean, it was just, it really pulled out some just great, great material.
That all sounds awesome.
And that was, that was fun. I like teaching teens. I like, I'm hoping to do more summer workshops on genres. So the book Teaching the Story is really about giving teachers or homeschool educators tools to help kids to learn to write a short story. And so I try to do in a like 60 to 90 minute workshop, we quickly write a very short story. Sometimes it's mystery, sometimes science fiction or fantasy. That's what kids like to write, is science fiction or fantasy, because then they can go wild with it. And that's where you get the Martians who can see the whole world or something. Like, oh, wait a minute, we have to be consistent here.
That's funny. Yeah, things have changed so much. When I was young, I was re wanting to watch to write a Little House on the Prairie type book. Nothing science fiction at all.
Yeah, no, kids today are, well, I'm sure the kids would like to write horror, but I don't like horror, so I don't give that as a genre. Kids are reading that, so they would probably like that.
So what you got going on next? What's your next book project or writing project?
Okay, so the next one I'm working on is called Out of the Flame.
Okay.
And one of my side passions has been glass, the history and science and art of glass.
Ooh.
So the story behind that is, oh, this is probably 20 years ago. My kids were little, so it was probably longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just writing for, I was writing short pieces for newspapers and magazines, and I had gone to Waxhaw, and I was going to write about the, have you been to Waxhaw?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I was wanted to write about the antique stores, and I went into a store where the lady sold glass beads,
mm-hmm.
and they were gorgeous. They were so beautiful.
Yeah,
I was
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, can I write about you? And she said, I'm going to introduce you to people that are bigger than me. She introduced me to some major figures. Well, one really major figure in the studio glass movement.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up writing about his children for Southern Living, about some glass artists. I was just fascinated by glass. It's just,
yeah.
You know, if you've ever seen glass blown, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I wrote a children's book on the science, history, and art of glass. It was called Discover Glass, and the publisher went out of business, and it never got published.
Oh, no.
Talk about, you know, putting time into it.
Oh,
and
I can imagine.
I mean, I had done so much work for that. Anyway, so I vowed that I would use that, all that information in another way.
Yeah.
Okay. So in Half Truths, so Kate moves into Myers Park.
Mm-hmm.
Her grandfather is a glass collector.
Okay.
And the reason he's a glass collector is that he's new money. Her grandmother is the old money.
Mm-hmm.
He was the vice president of the Coca-Cola bottling plant, which
okay.
was in Charlotte.
Yep.
Okay. But he's fictional.
Okay.
He's fictional. But he was a glass blower as a kid.
Oh, wow.
So Out of the Flame is starting with his life. When
okay.
he is 13, working in South Jersey he's not even an assistant, he's a glass boy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before child labor laws. That's another interest of mine,
Mm-hmm.
is just, you know, when you look at the child labor pictures that, his name is on the tip of my mind. You know who it is, but I can't think of it right now. But anyway, there's a lot of pictures of child labor and the glass workers.
Mm-hmm.
So that book is sort of a prequel to Half Truths, but not really,
Okay.
because it's
Okay.
going to be about the glass blowing industry.
Right.
So
that's so interesting, though. That's so cool how you're like tying everything together and just, oh, that's so amazing.
Well, what's really cool is the research. I mean, I just, you know, so, okay, so now I'll tell you the story. You might have to edit this out. This might end up being too long. But do we still have time for me
Yeah,
to keep talking?
we have 7 minutes.
Okay. All right. So the Out of the Flame, I'm hoping, is going to be two points of view and two timelines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be the grandfather, whose name is Andrew Dinsmore,
okay.
And he's going to be like 13 or 14 at the time. And he finds something in the walls of the dormitory he's staying in. He finds some glass objects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the second or the other story is going to be about the boy who put those glass objects in the walls of that house.
Oh my gosh.
He's going to be from colonial times.
Wow.
So that's what I'm hoping to do with that. So there's the two points of view.
That
two
is that is really cool. That is really neat.
So here's another story for you. I was very interested. So in order for this to make sense, I was like, well, what are the walls of a building made of? What would they have been made at that
Yeah.
time? Could they have been made where something was stored in the walls?
Mm-hmm.
So I went a couple of weeks ago, I went to Philadelphia to see my daughter who lives there. So she lives in outside of Philly. She lives where there were colonial houses.
Mm-hmm.
Found this colonial house about 20 minutes from her home that she knew about. We took a tour of it, got a private tour of it. It's a restored 1697 house. And they've done a tremendous job at showing what it looked like. And they also had a room in there of items that they had found when they were restoring the house. Okay, now hold on to that for a minute.
Okay.
We're gonna go back to half-truths for a minute.
Okay.
In half-truths, one of the things that ties the girls together is a piece of blue willow china. I don't know if you saw on my blog, I have, that's my picture.
It's blue willow china.
And I sort of picked it randomly. I thought it was pretty, but they both have a connection to it. And that's one of the ways that they figure out that they're related.
Okay.
So I'm now 2024, I'm going through this colonial home, going through this little room that showed in display cases, the things they found, there were six blue willow china plates.
Oh, wow.
That were probably from England because they were underneath the house. So when they were restored, you know, it was underneath the floorboards. I don't know how it got to the floorboards, but it was, and it looked different than what I've seen. I've seen blue willow china now, which is very thin. It was thick. But I'm thinking, this is the real deal. This is the real, and so here I am researching this other book and finding something from this other book.
Wow. That's amazing. I love them.
Yeah. And then I also found they also had little glass, tiny, tiny glass bottles that they had dug up. And because of the research I had done, I was pretty sure of where those glass bottles had been manufactured in Philadelphia because there weren't very many glass places that were making glass.
Yeah.
Unless it was imported, it could have been imported and I couldn't get close enough to see it.
Right.
But, you know, those are the things when you're researching and you have no idea you're going to, I had no idea come across it, but it's just, it, the coolness factor is really.
Yeah. It's just so exhilarating to find out all this kind of stuff. It's so neat.
Yeah. And it does, like you said, it just ties it together.
Yeah. Yeah. So where can people get your book?
Well, it's not out yet. So it's going to come out June of next year. The best way is to follow me on social media because I'll be posting it on social media and I can send you a link tree so you could maybe put that up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I'm developing a website right now, but until then I have a blog and then everything will get imported to the website. So people follow me on my website and they'll see it.
Okay.
Yeah, it will be available for pre-orders in about a year.
Oh, that's so exciting. That's so exciting. Are you just over the moon that it's like it's happening? I mean, we've done it before, so it's not like new thing.
But... Well, this is different because I've been working on it for so long.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is pretty exciting. I was really ecstatic when I found a publisher who was interested because historical fiction isn't the number one genre for kids right now.
Right.
I think half my readers will be adults.
Yeah.
Who like the story too. Hopefully we'll share it with their kids and grandkids.
Well, I was thinking that it does have enough of the kind of the, not science fiction, but just kind of like there's still a lot going on-ness of like, so like I said, it's not science fiction, but it has that kind
mystery.
Of mystery kind of element to it that would attract kids to it. So I think I think you can. You can do well with kids.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Carol, for chatting with me. And this has just been awesome. And enjoy the rest of your time in Florida.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Charlotte author Carol Baldwin. Her book Half Truths will be out next June, but you can check out her blog, Carol Baldwin Blog, at blogspot.com. And if you're in Charlotte, you can catch her at many library events or on social media. All will be linked on the post. If you're finding value in these episodes, please like or share. Thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production, music by Corey Knoxville.